my name is Mansi, and I am obsessed with unearthing every little secret about parenting, babies, business, and wellness that will help you navigate through all the questions you always wanted to ask, but didn't know who to. Think of this as your play date with a fellow mom over wine or coffee who loves her kids, but also needs her happy ass without them. Shy away from the real talk? No ways. Whether it's money, business, failure, baby, sex, or frustrations of not keeping it all together, we've got you covered. So now grab your tea, sit cozy, and stay tuned for another stellar episode of Keep It Real podcast by KidStopRest.com. Today, we're talking about something that is connected to everything that you're feeling, thinking about, and craving. Sure, the adult human gut tract can stretch up to 30 feet long. It's called the second brain, containing a complex network of neurons that some scientists say, and it can operate independently of the brain and the spinal cord, controlling digestion, mood, and even influencing your overall health. Did you know the maternal vaginal microbiome is an important source for infant gut microbiome development? Babies born through C-sec do not contact the maternal vaginal microbiome, and this delivery method may perturb the early establishment and development of the gut microbiome. About 70 to 80% of the body's immune cells are located in the gut. This makes sense considering that the gut is constantly exposed to foreign substances from the environment through the foods that we eat. The gut produces 95% of the body's serotonin, a neurotransmitter that regulates mood, appetite, and sleep. Now, why is this important, you may wonder? Why is KidStop Press doing an episode on gut health? Let me tell you why. Because you are not only going to listen to this for yourself, but also for the family that you're raising. Coming to today's guest, I'm absolutely thrilled to bring to you a powerhouse in the world of Ayurveda and gut health, the incredible Dimple Jangra. She's not just an Ayurveda coach, but also an international speaker and a visionary founder of Prana Healthcare Center and Prana Academy for Ayurvedic Life Sciences, and most importantly, a dear friend. I've been eagerly awaiting this episode because I know it's going to be jam-packed with invaluable insights. If you do follow my posts and stories on KidStop Press and at Mansi.Zaveri on Instagram, then you will know that we're huge fans of eating local and seasonal and always talk about aaj khane mein kya hai all the time. Our meal plans are devised keeping this in mind along with how busy you are. I needed weekly meal plans to raise a healthy family, so I created these ones that feature breakfast, lunch, dinner, along with school dabbas and evening snacks for kids. Sign up, get it on WhatsApp, prep, and send new easy things every single week for your to make sure that your dabbas come home empty, leaving the links for you in the description box below. In today's episode, we're going to chat about the pros and cons of frozen food, screen time and eating, and of course, PCOD too. If you want answers, then stay tuned till the very end of it because we're going to discuss all of it. Hi guys, so very excited to chat with Dr. Dimple here. We've been, she's obviously been my doctor. She's advised me on a lot of Ayurvedic practices. I've been her student, been a patient with her, and now, of course, we're now friends for a while, and I'm so excited to be at her place today. It has the most amazing, calming energy, and I know you exude just the same. It's incredible.
Thank you so much. I think this is a dream home for me, and it's all about minimalism, to be honest. Yeah. Just keeping things very minimal, very clean, aesthetic at the same time, and lots of nature in the house.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We have one more thing in common, which is our love for plants. But Dimple, you have some big news coming up, which is about the book.
Yeah.
So you want to tell us a little bit about that first?
So the book that's coming out, it's called Heal Your Gut, Mind and Emotions. And it's a book that discovers how you can actually heal your body at home using the science of Ayurveda, backed by modern research. So this is not something that's too traditional, but at the same time, it's not too modern. It's a marriage between the two worlds. And it talks about, you know, basic principles like circadian rhythm, food pyramid, understanding, you know, the pros and cons of intermittent fasting, and also Viruddhahar, which is my area of expertise. It's called food chemistry, understanding how different combinations of foods can either trigger disease or can nourish your body. It's either poison or it's nutrition. So you have to decide what you're giving your body. Are you feeding your disease or are you feeding your health? You have to ask this question every time you eat or drink anything.
Incredible. I love the word food chemistry that you mentioned. Dimple, tell us a little bit about your background and how did you get into the process of learning Ayurveda, teaching Ayurveda, and of course now practicing as well.
Yeah. So this happened to me accidentally. You know, Ayurveda was never a career of choice. In fact, the word Ayurveda didn't exist in my books. I don't think anybody in my family practices Ayurveda until recently, right? So I'm an ex-investment banker, ex-TV producer, TV reporter, and, you know, I've done all the works. I've been all over the world doing a whole lot of circus, trying to figure out my career. And this came as a calling at the peak of my career, you know, where I just wanted to do something that's more sustainable, where I get to give back to the society and contribute to the health of the community. And I came back to India and I started exploring, you know, traditional sciences and natural sciences like yoga, naturopathy, Ayurveda. And interestingly enough, you know, Ayurveda spoke to me, like, you know, in a very unique way, because growing up, I had a lot of diseases as a child. I was born with epilepsy. I had migraines up to the age of 20, almost every single day. It was like a new normal for me to be in pain. And I had 4 surgeries even before I turned 18 for fibrocystic benign lumps, deviated septum, and then tonsillitis. And I was exposed to so much radiation since I was a little baby. Up to the age of 18, multiple scans and x-rays and mammograms and MRI, CT scans, you're constantly getting exposed to radiation. Mm-hmm. You don't realize the impact it has on your health. And we never understood what was the root cause of my ailments at that point in time. The doctors had no answers. You know, they would just take us from one surgery to another surgery, not really addressing the root cause of the disease, right? It's a very symptomatic approach. So you have a fibrocystic benign lump or a tumor or a, you know, fibroid or a cyst. You're operating and removing it, but can the doctor really guarantee that you'll never again get a tumor or a fibroid or a cyst? We've not addressed the root cause. And the root cause is nutrition. You become what you eat. You know, the food you eat either nourishes your body or diseases or causes diseases, right? It can poison you. And I started studying Ayurveda and I opened a clinic as a CSR. You know, I hired doctors and therapists. I brought them on board. I brought biotech researchers on board to marry traditional science with modern science. And they started doing research and we found, like, you know, most of the answers was in validating what was already written in Ayurveda. Colon health, like, it's the root cause of 90% of the diseases we suffer. 90% of the diseases are due to internal factors. Only 10% is due to external factors like a mosquito bite or a COVID, you know, pandemic or an accident or a fracture. You know, only 10% is external. 90% is due to what you eat. And then I started diving deeper and deeper and I started teaching what I learned during the pandemic. That's when we met. And, you know, I started teaching what I understood from the clinic, from the doctors and Ayurveda. And I found Viruddha Ahar, food chemistry, to be a subject that was the most enticing. You know, the correct combination can nourish your body and the wrong combination can instantly kill an infant. Example, grapes and milk. If it's had within 15 minutes, if a child has a bowl of grapes and you give them child, you know, a glass of milk, it's so poisonous, it can kill an infant within the same day. That's how poisonous it is. And I said, wait, if grapes and milk, which looks so harmless and nourishing as separate products, can become poisonous when they come together, there must be a whole lot of combinations that we're eating wrong.
Right.
And Viruddha Ahar is a separate subject in Ayurveda that I started studying deeper and deeper. And I found that it was an entire book by itself, Viruddha Ahar. Right. So that's how we started exploring food chemistry and educating our students and our patients not to eat the wrong combinations.
Right. So tell us, if you have to elaborate on the most common Viruddha Ahars that you see people eating in India and across the world, what would those be?
Oh my God. Let's begin with something as basic as honey.
Yeah.
You know, honey was medicine back in the day.
Yeah.
Our grandmothers and mothers didn't give us honey every single day.
Yeah.
Now it's become a staple product on the dining table. People put honey in everything, like in their hot teas and coffees and beverages, hot milk, you know, on your waffles. Waffles is fine, you know, to an extent. Honey turns poisonous when you heat it.
Right.
This is something people need to understand. When honey is heated, it releases a compound called HMF, which is toxic in rats, in bees. It kills bees immediately, pasteurized honey. Instantly, the same day. 100% mortality rate. Rats were given HMF, which is the compound that comes from heated honey. And there was more than 50% mortality rate. You know, they started having skin diseases, they lost sight, the brains and the nervous health was affected deeply. If it can do that kind of a damage to honeybees that create honey and to rats, then in small proportions, you're constantly building that poison in your body.
Right.
And Ayurveda says that heated honey is so toxic, it gets built up in your system and even gods can't reverse it. I mean, of course, they say it in an exaggerated manner, but it says that it's so difficult to detoxify or remove heated honey from your system because it just crystallizes, blocks your shrotas, which is your channels. And in the long run, it starts translating in the form of skin diseases and unexplained diseases, which you don't know where it came from. Honey is probably the number one. Number two is fruits and dairy products. Fruits with milk, fruits with yogurt, fruits with cheese, toxic. Then eating, you know, fruits with vegetables. It leads to indigestion. It's not toxic and poisonous, but it leads to indigestion. Mixing fruits with grain. You know, when I've done that mistake, before I started Ayurveda.
So give me an example of food and grains.
You know, simple mistakes that even we've done, like all of us have done it. Taking an oatmeal and decorating with fruits on the top.
Yes.
It looks great for Instagram, but it's not at all healthy.
Right. But I mean, some traditions, like the Thai, they have like a mango sticky rice.
Yeah.
But how is that still traditional and Virudh?
Mango is the king of all fruits for a reason.
Right.
It's the most compatible fruit. Now, the exception to the fruit and dairy rule is mango and avocado. Mango can be mixed with milk, perfectly safe. In fact, it reduces the heat. I wouldn't mix mango with yogurt, even though some people do that, you know, the mango lassi, because the bacteria from yogurt starts feeding on the fructose, the sugar in yogurt, and it can actually create a sugar spike in the body, which is not good. Mango and avocados can be easily mixed with milk. It can also be mixed with grains. So mango sticky rice is fine. Mango pudding is fine. Avocado with your vegetables is fine.
Yeah.
It's compatible.
Got it.
Because it's also creamy, right? And it doesn't have so much fruit acids as the other fruits have, like citric acid, malic acid, tartaric acid. These are active acids. Mango and avocado is a subtler version of all fruits. It has to be ripe though, the mango. You should make sure that it's ripe.
Got it.
Unripe mango is going to react with milk and it's going to cause, you know, the milk to curdle, to break in your stomach. It can give you even tummy aches. So some people do this raw mango salad.
Yeah.
Make sure not to have a smoothie or a milk product right after that.
I read in one of your quotes where you said that, you know, that the gut has been dubbed by scientists as body's second brain. And you've been working on that. You're also launching a book about that. What are we... One, of course, is, you know, not eating the wrong food combinations. But how do we ensure that right from childbirth, we are nourishing and nurturing that child's gut health?
Yeah.
And not going against. So what are some of the gut healing foods?
You know, number one is choosing how you give birth to the child.
Right.
People don't realize that plays a huge role in the child's gut health, which, by the way, impacts the child's mental and emotional health. C-section has become a very common procedure nowadays, right? Unless it's a complication, please don't opt for a C-section voluntarily. Nowadays, people pick the birth date of the child and then go in for a C-section.
Yeah.
A vaginal birth allows the baby to expose to all the vaginal bacteria, which is a gut a flora by itself.
Yeah.
You know that it's a massive flora of bacteria, and that boosts the child's immunity. And the gut bacteria develops from the vaginal bacteria.
Wow!
So the child's first set of bacteria comes from the mother.
Yeah.
And that not only boosts your immunity against other kinds of bacteria and virus and parasites that's there in the air and the food that you eat, it also allows you to digest food better. So it begins with that. Number one. Number two, when you start raising your children, give them good healthy habits, you know, allow them to eat a fruit. Stop spoiling them with fruit juices. You know, nowadays, carton, you know, fruit cartons are available widely. People give a little straw and think they're keeping the child busy and healthy. You're absolutely, you know, you're absolutely doing the exact opposite. The sugar spike that comes from fruit juices is addictive. Children become more hyperactive and then they start craving it more and more and more.
Yeah.
Number two, you're not really absorbing the nutrients well because there's no fiber. Fibers are not there. So give them a raw fruit. Let them chew on it, especially children that are teething, you know, like toddlers. Give them like a piece of stewed apple or stewed carrots even. Let them chew on it.
Yeah.
That's another good source of bacteria. And when they grow up, maybe after the age of 5 or 6, you can start introducing yogurt in their diet, like yogurt rice.
Yeah.
Curd rice is like the first source of bacteria in India.
Yeah.
For most of us, curd rice. Then we have fermented foods in India, like idli, dosa, dhokla. But we have it once a week. We don't overdo it.
Right.
And in other countries, like other Asian countries, they have kombucha, kimchi, sauerkraut, pickled vegetables. You can add a dollop of it, not overdo it.
Yeah.
Just a small part of it. That's, again, a great way of introducing bacteria into the gut.
Right. Also, force feeding children, right? I've seen that some kids just have aversions. It could be to anything green. It could be to a fruit. It could be to something else. So why do kids have these food aversions? And is it okay to force feed?
Definitely no for force feeding. I am a example of it. Okay, so when I was young, I was underweight. I probably had bulimia, probably undiagnosed, you know, bulimia. I was very marasmic as a child, very skinny, very underweight. And my parents thought the best way to make me gain weight was to give me a big glass of milk that was so thick, not even diluted with water. That was the way of showing love. They would force me to drink milk, and I hate to admit this, but I used to actually throw away the milk in the sink. And that's such a regret I have today. That, you know, we wasted valuable resources. We wasted valuable food. But my body rejected milk at that young age. It just didn't want it. And then suddenly someone, you know, prescribed to my mother to put me on soya milk diet to help my body develop better, right? You know, they said it helps improve estrogen and female hormones. And it was such a bad advice. I developed fibroids from it. And I ended up in the hospital for deviated septum and inflamed tonsillitis from the soya milk because I was so allergic to it. Stop force feeding your children. This is something I say to all parents out there. Do not force feed your child. Of course, you know, if you're force feeding broccoli or green vegetables, that's fine. You need to get the child into the habit. But lead by example. Make sure everybody on the table, including the adults, are eating that, you know, vegetable. You can't be eating a bowl of ice cream in front of the child and then expect the child to eat vegetables. That doesn't happen. And if they have an aversion towards a certain fruit or a vegetable, it's the body explaining through those aversions that it's not able to digest it.
Right.
So say someone has a pitta prakriti, if a child has high metabolic fire, they don't do very well with pineapples or persimmons or tomatoes or lemons and limes and oranges. They feel that burning sensation.
Right.
Okay. And someone who's like a kapha prakriti, a thick body type, tendency towards cold and cough, they may not like melons, even though it's juicy and sweet. They will not like watermelons and muskmelon. So listen to your child, understand why your child is behaving in a specific manner. And the more you give them, you know, foods that's close to nature, not raw, but cooked, steamed, boiled, blanched, the more it's closer to nature, less processed, less cooked, lightly cooked foods, you'll be able to observe how they're responding to different foods. Then maintain a food journal. Okay, my child is allergic to honey. My child is allergic to dairy, like you found out with your own child.
Yeah.
Right? That was a great learning process and curve for you, which no doctor could have helped you with.
Yeah.
Only your mother can do that. You know, that's why they say the mother is the best doctor that the child has.
Right. Also, you know, this is a conversation that's really close to my heart, where we see so many children today eating, and so many mothers, actually, I wouldn't blame the children, so many mothers using frozen foods, like frozen fries and frozen nuggets and frozen whatever you may have, right? What is that frozen food? Is it even nourishing, or is it just fillers? Or what? If you have to read that back of pack, what is it actually in Ayurvedic practice reading?
You know, frozen food is for countries like, say, North America, where they don't have a fresh supply of fruits and vegetables.
Right.
Or, you know, different countries, you know, like even Middle East, maybe they don't have vegetation, they don't have flora and fauna at that point in time. Frozen foods are basically foods imported from another country in a frozen state so that you can still get some amount of nutrients, right, vitamins and minerals. But when you're living in a tropical country like India or other Asian countries, or even US for that matter, there's no reason for you to touch frozen foods at all.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, these frozen fries is instantly poisonous. You might not see an instant impact in terms of like nausea or diarrhea or vomiting or IBS. But continuous usage of the wrong food over a period of time is going to manifest in the form of a disease. So it's not overnight. Like, I had a French fry and now I have some nervous damage. That's not how it is. Most of these frozen foods are fried, okay, to bring them back into edible state, like your nuggets and your French fries. Anything that's deep fried not only loses its nutrients, especially vegetables when they're deep fried, releases a chemical called acrylamide, which can have a paralytic effect on rats. Now, again, you know, we as human beings use rats to experiment on everything.
Yeah.
If it can impact a rat, which has five senses, it definitely can impact human beings. Why? What are you waiting for? Like, are you waiting for scientists to experiment on the human body and say that, hey, guess what? You know, the French fries you've been eating is unhealthy.
Yes.
And there's so much research, you know, that has been shown that McDonald's French fries that all of us were addicted to at one point in time is probably one of the most unhealthiest form of potatoes by itself, which is a hybrid potato.
Yeah.
And you are, you know, freezing them, you know, importing it from another country and then deep frying it under high temperatures, releasing acrylamide. All of these are extremely unhealthy. Go for fresh foods.
Yeah.
You know, when you have the luxury of having a fresh fruit or a vegetable, why would you give your child something frozen?
Yeah.
Frozen is dead in Ayurveda.
Yeah.
Frozen is literally dead. Dead foods.
No, absolutely. And, you know, this is something that I've been working with my children as well. So every time they would want to have fries, I was like, no problem, we'll make it at home. Because there's nothing wrong with having the fries.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is made and the shelf life that it has lived, right? Like you absolutely. Said, it's just dead after a point in Ayurveda. We're in the midst of season change.
Yeah.
And I don't know a single person who's not sick. Colds, coughs, which are not seeing the end of light even after 4 weeks, six weeks of medication, antibiotics. That congestion is just there.
Yeah.
Our kids are falling sick more often. We're getting into the pollution season. It's going to get worse. How do we ensure that we can work around these perennial cold coughs?
Yeah. You know, talking about cold and cough, even I got a little cold and cough as an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
And you know, mine is a different one. It's not seasonal. It's an allergic reaction to some incense sticks that they used in the clinic. So this is something that an amazing allopathy doctor told me. And I met him just a few times, you know, and he's no more. He passed away. When I had a cold and cough, I would keep running to him because he was right next door, like a few streets away from my hostel at that point in time. He would just sit with me and talk to me about life and, you know, virtues and values. And then when I would ask him for a prescription, he would give me nothing.
Mm.
He'd just give me one emergency medicine. And he was an allopath, having practiced for 50 years. He said, when you have a cold, never take a medicine. Because what you're doing is, see, remember, modern science has no cure for the common cold.
Yeah.
This is proven. We all know this, that there's no cure for the common cold. What you're essentially doing with that medicine is blocking the mucus and all the virus and bacteria in your system. Mucus is a breeding ground for the disease. Mucus is also a breeding ground for various other diseases in the organs. What it does is it's like a green muck that just gets settled on the organs and doesn't allow the organ to function to its maximum ability, right? You'd rather let it out than stuff it back in. The body's defense mechanism is to create mucus to trap all the bacteria and the pollen grains and the allergens and release it out. Okay, so that's a carrier. That's not something that you block inside. Simple remedies like, you know, steaming with a few drops of eucalyptus oil, mint leaves, very potent. Adults can do jalneti. Jalneti is basically a neti pot, you know, with salt and water. You use it to flush your sinuses to get the bacteria out and the mucus out. Something that you yourself do, ajwain, you know, which is carom seeds. You just roast it on a pan, put it in a small poultice bag or a kerchief, and then use it to sniff.
Yeah.
Carom seeds has an anti-inflammatory effect on the sinus glands immediately. Including honey in your diet. Now, honey is something I don't recommend to everyone because it takes one honeybee an entire lifetime to just create half a teaspoon of honey. Mm. So, you know, we're taking away all their hard work, you know, which is why I say adults like us really don't need honey in our diet. It's like a very fancy thing that has just come, you know, in our cuisine nowadays. Yeah. We put honey on everything. Save the honey for children who are sick and for senior citizens who are sick. So when you have a cold and cough, honey is the best remedy that Mother Nature has given. It basically dissolves mucus.
Mm-hmm.
It takes everything down. And if you're allergic to a certain pollen grain, this is a trick. You have the honey sourced from that pollen grain. So you're introducing it as a food inside your body. Your body recognizes it as a food and no more as an allergen. So when the pollen grain hits, the body is acclimatized to it. It's basically introducing your body to the local bacteria, to the local pollen grains.
But how will I know which pollen I'm allergic to?
Simple trick is, source honey from your local topographic region.
Mm.
Do not buy these, I'm sorry to say, FMCG-based honey products, you know, because really, FMCG companies don't care for your health.
Yeah.
That's the hard truth. They only care for your addiction to their foods because addiction feeds their profit.
Yeah.
Right? The more addicted to you are to their foods. And no FMCG company can make so much honey, to be honest. It's impossible. So go to your local farmer's market. You know, every city has a local farmer's market.
Yeah.
Ask your local farmers to give you the local honey, which is sourced from their topographic region. It'll come with minimal packaging, minimal labels, you know, very raw and rustic. And sometimes it even has a honeycomb in it.
Yeah.
That's the authentic honey. That has all the pollen grains of your topographic region.
Interesting.
That's a simple way of boosting your immunity against the local bacteria and pollen.
Dimple, tell me a little bit about, we're seeing a lot of children, one, the addiction to screen and therefore the eyes.
Yeah.
And the other is, you know, in the process of Ayurveda, not looking at a device and eating it mindfully in that very moment. So, on screen for the eyes and screen and food combined.
Oh my God, it's such an important relationship.
We didn't know that would be a virudhahar now, screen and food.
It's a virudhahar for sure. It's just that you're not consuming the screen, but you're definitely consuming screen time, which is equally unhealthy, right?
Yeah.
You know, number one, this is basic knowledge, everybody knows. The blue light that comes out of screens, right from your mobile phones to your iPads, laptops, and even your television, it interferes with the melatonin production in your body, right? Now, melatonin is a hormone that your body produces in response to darkness and light. It tells you when is it time to wake up, when is it time to sleep. Excessive exposure to the screens is the reason why we're sleeping at the wrong time, waking up at the wrong time.
Right.
People are sleeping at 12 in the night, 1, 2, they're becoming nocturnal apparently. Human beings are not nocturnal, we are diurnal beings. We respond to the position of the sun. Okay, we are awake during the day, we're active during the day, and we sleep at night. We are not at all nocturnal. Mm-hmm. When you use the word nocturnal, you're basically trying to say that you're sick. Your circadian rhythm is broken.
Mm.
Your body clock is broken. That's what it means. That's number one. Number two, when we're looking at the screen, you know, as kids, like we did not have exposure to television up to the age of 16 till we finished our board exams.
Yeah.
We did not have television at home. And we would go to my relative's place during the summer holidays to watch TV.
Yeah.
So it was never part of our culture to look at TV and eat food. Now people are literally watching TV and putting food in their mouth, unmindful, not even aware of what's on their plate. Remember, the five senses that you have is for you to absorb information, right? So when you look at a plate of food, your eye is calculating what are the combinations on the plate. And a wise evolved being will take out a few items from the plate saying that this is not for me. Dahi is not for me. Maybe this, you know, deep fried food is not for me today. This chili is for me. Let me take the chili for me today. Based on how they're feeling. So you have to understand that your doshas are shifting on a daily basis, hourly basis inside your body. Mm. Now, for example, I might have a kapha imbalance, you know, because of a little cold. So I will look at my plate and I'll put in the chilies. I'll take out the dairy products, which I don't have any which ways. Okay. So your eyes is communicating with the brain and the brain is communicating with the rest of your organs. And the organs are communicating back to the brain on what they want.
Mm.
The bacteria in your gut is also telling the brain what it's craving. So the good bacteria will crave healthy foods. The bad bacteria will crave bad foods.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's one. Second, you have to listen to the sound of the food. You have to feel it in your fingers. You know, that's why we eat with our hands, not with a fork or a spoon. So when you eat with your hands, again, the sensation, whether it's hot, cold, whether it's moist, whether it's dry, whether it's rough, whether it's greasy and pulpy, you know, that information again goes to the brain. The brain sends messages to the mouth, the salivary glands, and the stomach. They start creating the digestive juices and enzymes. It's like going to someone's house after informing them.
Mm.
You don't go unannounced to somebody's house. They'll have nothing to offer you.
Right.
So you don't go to your own stomach unannounced. Let your stomach know what you're giving it. So use your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Even smelling food can help you prevent food poisoning.
Right.
You know, smell the food. Has it got rancid? You can't see it with the naked eye.
Yeah.
But you can smell it. Something's wrong. Something is off. You know, someone makes a pineapple raita for you. You have to smell it, you know. Pineapple and lactose do not agree with each other. They react very quickly and they break and curdle in your stomach. You can just smell it. You'll be like, okay, there's something very off about it. I don't want to put it in my stomach. Put it away immediately. You can prevent yourself from getting poisoned. Food poisoning happens almost on a daily basis to most of us nowadays. We don't even realize. And our body reacts to nausea, burping, bloating, IBS, diarrhea, and we think it's normal. It's not normal. It means you've been poisoned by the combination of food you ate and now you're running to the bathroom.
Right.
So your eyes, ears, nose, mouth are also part of your digestive health.
Right.
They're communicating and you don't want to cut it out.
Right. You know, when you mentioned the pineapple raita thing, just a thought, how do fruit ice creams work?
Oh God.
And ice cream in Ayurveda.
So, you know, ice cream is a pleasure food. Okay. It's something that you have once in a while. Back in the day during the summers, you know, the Mughals brought the concept of kulfi ice cream in India.
Yeah.
They would put dairy along with some, you know, condiments like saffron and pistachio and some cardamom. Delicious, you know, and they would store it under the ground, which would allow that to solidify into a kulfi ice cream.
Yeah.
So that's the authentic ice cream that was done during the summers to cool the body down a little bit. But it was still nourishing. It was naturally cooled under the ground.
Right.
Not in a refrigerator, right? Ice cream by itself is a virudhahar.
Mm-hmm.
Virudhahar means conflicting combination of food. Now, dairy, when it's frozen, by the way, creates more mucus in the body.
Right.
So when you have a cold and a cough, you don't have an ice cream, would you?
No.
You wouldn't give a child an ice cream when the child is sick or having a weak immunity. Why? Because you know immediately the ice cream is going to worsen the immunity. It's going to worsen the disease and the symptoms, right? So ice cream by itself is a virudahar. If you want to have it once in a while, no harm. Have it. Remember, it's a delicacy. It's an indulgence.
Yeah.
But mixing fruit with ice cream, I'm sorry, the fruit acids, like citric acid especially, which is found in most of the fruits, reacts with the lactic acid that's found in dairy products, and it immediately curdles and breaks in your tummy. And you feel a little, you know, discomfort in your tummy, especially when you've eaten out. You come back feeling like, my tummy's a little upset, but I can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to discuss their shame with everyone.
Right? Yeah.
My tummy's a little upset, but I don't have to tell anyone. I'm bloated, I'm gassy, I'm having flatulence, I'm having acidity, I'm having a reflux.
Right.
Nobody talks about it openly.
Right.
That's a result of what you've eaten. And that fruit ice cream is not a dessert.
Yeah.
It's also an indulgence that's gone too far.
Yeah.
We might want to cut back on that.
Okay. Also talking about raw foods, right? Raw foods at... So do you want to tell us a little bit about raw food and raw food for children? If someone wants to have it, then at what time? Because we just see people eating, and I can say this because I know she's completely said raw foods for dinner is like the worst thing that you can do your body. And I know everybody who wants to lose weight somehow just says, I'm eating only salads and soups. And I silently laugh now. I've learned it from her, where you say you don't need to comment on every bit of it, you just need to absorb it. But raw foods for children, raw foods for adult, and the right time to have it.
What would you give a child that's teething, 1-year-old child? Would you give them a raw carrot or stewed carrot?
Stew.
You wouldn't be comfortable giving a raw carrot to the child because you'd be like, what if it has some kind of, you know, tapeworms or, you know, some kind of bacterial infection? Because remember, vegetables, fruits are home to parasites as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are home to other kinds of unhealthy bacteria, good bacteria, all kinds of bacteria, virus and parasites. Why? Is the fruit and vegetable bad? No.
Yeah.
It's nourishment even for those parasites, even for those tapeworms, right? It nourishes our body, it nourishes also these microorganisms. A simple rule in Ayurveda, which all our grandmothers practiced, any vegetable that came home was blanched in hot water. Okay, so it would take off all the bacteria, the many hands that it has crossed, you know, and the many containers it has crossed before coming to you. It takes away all the unhealthy bacteria. The bacteria from the soil is good, but the bacteria from the human hands is not so good, right? So we blanch it in hot water and we always cook all our foods. The only two vegetables we had raw was carrots and cucumbers, which was given to adults, not even to children.
Yeah.
Stewed vegetables, boiled, steamed, is better for your gut because your gut can digest, absorb and assimilate the nutrients faster.
Yeah.
Versus a raw food makes your gut work harder. Now, who should have raw foods? There's a very small part of the human population whose metabolic fire is extremely weak. We give them raw carrots, or maybe some raw cucumbers, a few pieces, but never raw beetroot. Onions also in rare occasions. We give raw onions only if the metabolic fire is very weak. But not all of us have weak metabolic fire, especially those living in the cities. Our metabolic fire is raging as a direct relationship to the city's fast-paced life.
Yeah.
You do not eat raw foods. One, because you don't want parasitic infections, tapeworm eggs, if they enter the body, enter the brain, it can cause epilepsy, seizures. You know, considering the fact that I grew up with epilepsy, I can understand where it came from.
Yeah.
Right? So you do not give your children raw foods except carrot and cucumbers.
Right.
And avocado is a fruit, so you can give fruits raw as much as you like.
Right. And the time of the day?
Like, you know, follow the circadian rhythm. Eat between sunrise and sunset. And the best time to eat raw foods, I would say, is in the afternoon. When the sun is at the peak, your metabolic fire is at the peak, your body's ability to break down that raw food is better. Otherwise, remember, your body has to work harder to eat the raw food. In the evening is not a good time.
Right.
Evening is a great time for you to have maybe some sautéed vegetables. You know?
Right.
Lightly cook it.
Yeah.
It also improves saliva in your mouth.
Right.
You know, the sautéed vegetables, the spices and the condiments and the herbs in it. You can have a bowl of vegetable soup. No harm.
Right.
But be wise in your choices. You don't want to have carbs, fine. No one's forcing you. But carbs is great for dinner, by the way.
Yeah.
It allows you to fall asleep better. Like, you know, small bowl of rice. We don't overdo it. Just a small bowl, if you can. But if you don't want to have it, that's fine. At least saute your vegetables. Don't eat it raw.
Right. You know, like we were talking about allergies. Now we're going to get into the peak of, you know, the autumn season. Five things that you would recommend for season change. For children?
You know, the five foods that I usually recommend when season is changing. For adults, I recommend monodieting. Moong dal khichdi, for lunch and dinner at least for 7 days. Now the season is changing. My body naturally craves moong dal khichdi because it's like a break. It's like a holiday for the digestive system.
Yeah.
And your digestive system has been working hard since the day you were born. Give it a break, you know, with some simple foods. So moong dal khichdi is great for seasonal changes. And, you know, in Ayurveda, it's called Rutucharya. Ritu means season and charya means rituals. This is a ritual you follow between two seasons. This allows your body to acclimatize to the new season without falling sick. Mm-hmm. That's one. Two, for children, I usually recommend honey and ginger. Ginger is anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral. And ginger is all season. You know, it's not a seasonal vegetable or a spice for that matter. You can use ginger in all your cuisines, you know. And if you're someone with a very weak immunity, maybe you want to include some garlic. I like the heaty spices like cinnamon, cardamom, clove, carom seeds, pepper, black pepper, the whole pepper, and turmeric. Excellent. Turmeric is, again, all season. You can have it in the summers, winters, spring, autumn. It's all season. Of course, the amount of turmeric you have increases during winter and the monsoons.
Yeah.
And you have less turmeric during the summer season because it can cause yellow discoloration of your skin as well sometimes. Yeah. So these are some basic herbs and spices that you must keep in your kitchen.
Right. Dimple, you want to tell us about the top five fruits for children?
I love apples. An apple a day keeps a doctor away. And one apple is equal to one cup of coffee. It has that waking effect on your body. Mm-hmm. So give your children one apple in the morning. Number two, pineapples, rich source of vitamin C. If not pineapples, you can give your child kiwi if the child likes sweet kiwi. Grapes is also fine, but remember to soak it in hot water and then take it out so they don't catch a cold or a cough. Mango, the king of all fruits. It is a powerhouse of micronutrients and minerals and vitamins. Definitely give your children mango. Banana is great most of the days, but not on the day the child has cold, cough, or constipation. Banana is given when you have a diarrhea instead. Mm. So these are the top five fruits that children naturally crave because they're sweet. They help in building tissues as well. And they help in cleansing the tissues, like the citric fruits.
Right. You know, we also spoke of hormone health, especially for young girls today, with girls having... teenagers having PCOS, PCOD, thyroid. How can we address these sort of lifestyle disorders in young girls?
I have been seeing a lot of mothers bringing their children into the clinic, and it's heartbreaking. Let me tell you, one-year-old child, girl child, showing development of breasts. Six-year-old children already showing signs of the period cycle coming.
Yeah.
This early puberty has started hitting our human body, especially female children are most affected by it. Reason being the foods that we're eating. Okay, number one is the dairy product. Let me tell you, it sounds like I'm anti-dairy or something, but just look at where the dairy is coming from. Back in the day, every family had a cow, you know, the cow was treated well. Most of the families had a cow. And, you know, even getting milk from a gaushala if you didn't have a cow was a very normal ritual in every family. Yeah. Every family knew a gaushala, which is basically a cow shelter farm. The cows were treated with kindness, and you know, the cow would give birth maybe 2 to 3 times in its entire lifetime.
Mm.
But now, 8 billion human beings. Do we really have 8 billion cows in the world? We don't. So the same cow is inseminated and forced to give birth every year, and then injected with steroids, antibiotics, and drugs to increase its milk production capacity.
No.
And that cow's uterus is ruptured and cancerous most of the times. And the cow is injected with so many unhealthy hormones. Do you think that unhealthy cow is going to give you healthy milk?
Yeah.
The cow is releasing estrogen, pus, and blood. Milk in the US is actually banned in almost 42 countries because they allow 5% pus in the milk. It's normal for them. Now, what do you think that pus and blood and the hormones and estrogen from the milk is going to do to your child's body? It's going to accelerate the puberty cycle. It's going to advance it. Children will start having periods at the age of 6, 7, which we've already started witnessing. They start developing breasts. They start developing, you know, an adult body already at a young age, which is mentally traumatic. It seems like a lot, but make a little effort to make almond milk, coconut milk, oat milk, cashew milk. They're all powerhouse of nutrients, and we're not overdoing it. We're taking 5 almonds versus 1 glass of milk, but 1 glass of water, right? So that's barely 5 almonds per day per child, which the child can easily sustain and digest. A little effort once a week, you make it, stock it in your fridge. It lasts for 3 to 5 days easily. You don't even have to make it every day in the morning.
Yeah,
that's a way better supplement or an alternative compared to the cow's milk. Cow's milk, dahi, paneer, cheese, such an overabused industry. And do you really want to eat products from an overabused industry? No. That's the first thing you cut out from your child's health, child's diet plan, if your child is already showing signs of early puberty.
Got it. Another thing that we wanted to touch upon was, routines and the importance of routines for adults and children. Do you want to talk about the Dinacharya?
Yeah, so you know the word for it because you've done the Ayurveda masterclass, and rituals, as you know, has become a very common topic of interest for many authors around the world.
Yeah.
They keep talking about how you need to have rituals in place because it's great for mental health.
Yeah.
It's actually a way of disciplining your body, mind, and letting your body know when to expect what. You don't brush your teeth in the middle of the day. You brush your teeth in the morning. You go to the bathroom in the morning and empty your bowels. But if you're doing it at odd times, you will not know what to expect from your body, right? Dinacharya itself means day and rituals, daily rituals, right? It allows you to detoxify body on a daily basis and sync your body clock to the clock of Mother Nature. And I tell this to a lot of people, like, you know, first get your circadian rhythm in place. Get your body clock in place. Rise with the sun, set with the sun. Your day cannot begin at 10 in the morning and 11 in the morning. That's absolutely wrong. It has to start 45 minutes before sunrise. Like, you know, there was a time when I used to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning every single day to do my chanting. Now I wake up at 5:40 and I go for a nice leisurely swim, come back and then chant, then pray, then have my breakfast. I've had 3 hours of personal time, 3 hours of me time where I'm investing in my health. You need to invest in your body first before you expect anything out of your body. Right. You want to go skateboarding, you want to do hiking, trekking, you want to pursue your career, you know, you want to be a successful, you know, businesswoman, businessman. First, invest in your body before you expect your body to fulfill your dreams.
Right.
So get your circadian rhythm in place, number one. Number two, manifestations, gratitude exercises, chanting, meditation. These are the most, I think, underrated rituals,
right?
You know, and then you have your physical rituals, like say a full body massage once in a while, dry brushing, maybe jal neti pot, steaming, oil pulling, gargling, you know, and tongue scraping. Do it on a daily basis. Having a bath with some warm water instead of just using cold water at all times. These are rituals that are great. And then at night, you know, before you go to bed, switch off your electronics 1 hour before going to bed, so your brain can actually switch off. And then again, do your gratitude exercises, do your manifestations. And, you know, be grateful for everything you've received through the day and call it, if it be the last night of my life, may I be with my gods. You know, at least say a little prayer before going to bed. These are rituals that will guarantee you mental health and peace.
Right.
And that is going to lead to good health of the body as well.
Right. Have you ever found defending Ayurveda with conflict with people who don't believe in it?
Oh my God, all the time, okay? For some reason, you know, some of our content has gone viral, and, you know, I'm grateful for whatever algorithm, you know, that has worked in our favor and the love that we've received from the people. But there'll always be people who will not be happy for you. And, you know, I remember making a video on this, like, you know, the eagle, you know, rules the skies, and not all birds are going to be happy for the eagle. So the crow gets on the top of the eagle's back and starts pecking on it.
Yeah.
The eagle doesn't fight back. Okay. But the eagle is a majestic bird. It just starts flying up higher and higher up in the sky where the air is really thin. And the crow that's not habituated to this thin air or to these great heights faints and falls off.
Yeah.
So people will always attack it. Okay. And sadly, Ayurveda still call us pseudoscience on Wikipedia, which is controlled by the masses. Wikipedia is not the father of science.
Yeah.
Wikipedia is managed by people like you and I. We all have the right to go on Wikipedia and edit it, right? Pharma, or, you know, the modern science world, not everybody approves of Ayurveda. There are a lot of allopathy doctors who now prescribe Ayurvedic treatments to their own patients, saying that go and get a detoxification done first,
right,
instead of just suppressing, right? So you'll always have people who don't approve of it, okay? Because Ayurveda is a science that is 5,000 years old. And it cannot be commercialized, neither can it be owned by one single corporate company, which means there's no profit to make.
Yeah.
There's no profit to make from health. You can only make profit off disease, right? And if everybody's healthy at home, everybody's practicing Ayurveda at home, like you're practicing at home, you're not going to the doctors, you're not going to the hospitals, you're not buying pharmaceutical products, you're not feeding the profit coffers of other people.
Yeah.
You're just keeping your children healthy. So that obviously triggers a little bit of, you know, competition. I would say a lot, I would say envy or jealousy, or, you know, let's call it pseudoscience. Let's say that it has no
but
research.
Tell you know, everything about it takes a time and while for people to believe it, because there's no immediate result, right? And so how do you convince people that it works? Or like, because it's not symptomatic treatment.
No, it's not. Ayurveda addresses the root cause of the disease, okay? It says that you cannot have a symptomatic approach. So say if you have a cold, cough or fever, and you go to a modern doctor, they'll give you a medicine for cold, cough and fever. But in Ayurveda, the doctor will check your nadi, will check your digestion, your metabolism, right, and what you ate in the last few days, where did you travel? You know, it's literally like an investigative science.
Yeah.
And then they'll pinpoint and find out something that you've eaten has poisoned your system. And your body is now going into a fever, cold, cough, symptomatic, approach, where the body is trying to expel the toxin out through fever, through cold, through cough, by sweating out.
Yeah.
So you can't treat the fever and cold and cough. You have to treat the toxin or the poison that's trapped in the digestive health. You have to detoxify the body, right? So because we're addressing the root cause, it might take 2-3 days longer. It's not a painkiller. It's not an antibiotic that you can take and instantly within 2 hours, you feel that there's no cold anymore. That's in fact more dangerous. Then you can't feel anything inside your body. I was under the impression that Ayurveda is slow, but I had urticaria in 2020, just before COVID, because I had some wrong combinations of food served in an ashram where I'd gone for a retreat. And I went to my allopathy doctor immediately. It was stage 2 or 3 maybe. You know, the urticaria was so bad. My face, my chest, my hands was all inflamed, turned red and black, like an acid attack victim. I'm sorry to use the word, but it looked that bad. And I rushed to my skin specialist and to my Ayurvedic doctor as a precaution. My skin specialist, who's also an Ayurvedic follower, but an allopath, sent me back to the Ayurveda clinic saying, I'm not going to give you any steroids, because it's only going to make things worse. Go back and start your detoxification immediately. There's some poison in your system. And I started my Ayurvedic treatment. They gave me 6 months to recover. In 2 weeks, my skin fell off. My dead skin fell off. And I had brand new baby soft skin. In 2 weeks, I recovered, much to the surprise of my own doctors. So it's a misconception that it's slow. It's just that you need to be patient at least for the first 2 days. Address the root cause. Don't have a symptomatic, instant gratification approach. You're not going to address your disease.
Right. While you spoke of skin, I also want to talk about, I know once you told me that, Mansi, I had terrible skin as a teenager.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Ayurvedic skin care.
Oh my. Oh God, that's actually going to be our next venture also. You know, growing up, I had such terrible skin, pimples and acne every single day, bumps on the face, and I just couldn't tell why I had all of that. My mother couldn't explain, and nobody in the family understood, you know. They just thought it's like a phase, you know, you're hormonal, it's going to subside when you're 20. No, it didn't. When I was 20, I had more pimples and acne on my face, right? It took me a while to understand the relationship between nutrition and skin, between gut health and skin. It took me a lot of time, right? Your face is a visual representation of what's happening inside your gut and inside your body. Your organ health is reflecting on your skin. That's one. Number two, if you have a leaky gut syndrome, the toxins will surface towards the skin, you know, especially that has leaked from the gut. And they're going to start, you know, manifesting in the form of rosacea, eczema, psoriasis, urticaria, which happened in my case as well. So one is addressing nutrition. Number two, understand that the skin is the largest porous breathing organ. So a lot of people are like, oh no, the skin doesn't absorb anything. I was like, so where does the sweat come from? It comes from in, right? Just like how your body is able to release toxins and sweat through the pores, it can very well absorb what you're applying on the skin. It's the largest breathing porous organ of our body, bigger than your lungs. So you have to be careful about the products you apply. You know, there are a lot of Ayurvedic herbs that's available. I follow the 80-20 rule. 80% of the time, my body wash is made in my kitchen, fresh, with basin and, you know, chickpea flour, some maybe, you know, coconut cream, some lemon, some turmeric. I make my own rose petal powder at home and orange peel powder at home. We put a little bit of that. Every day is a treat for the skin. 20% of the times when you're traveling, choose products where you can actually read the ingredients. If it has these complex chemical names, you're better off not using it, especially your sunblock. Loaded with chemicals that are all endocrine disruptors. They're only going to lead to more complex diseases like, you know, thyroid and PCOS, PCOD and rosacea and, you know, alopecia, vitiligo. These are all autoimmune disorders for which you have no cure.
Right.
You don't want to end up with that.
So what would Dr. Dimple's skincare routine be like?
Oh, God. So, you know, these are my favorite products. One is the uptan that I make at home, which is chickpea flour, rose petal. We get roses dried at home and make a powder. Every time I have an orange juice or eat an orange, the peel is saved, dehydrated, we make a powder. Turmeric is an essential ingredient in everything. Lemon, rose water. The most underestimated, astringent pore closing toner that you have in the world is your rose water, not your complex skincare products. So I love using that. And there are one or two brands that I trust because they're not tested on animals. I know the ethics are higher than other companies. Don't buy cheap products. Yeah. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Super. Let's get into a quick rapid fire. One food you would say avoid in the diet according to Ayurveda?
Completely. Deep fried foods.
Okay. One food you would add in the diet?
Moong dal khichdi.
In Dimple's house, this one thing is absolutely not allowed.
French fries. Okay. Potato chips, I would say rather.
One healthy practice that is a must have in every home?
Waking up early.
Okay. One piece of advice you would want to share with all parents?
Listen to your children.
One thing that is a no-go for gut health?
Raw salads, I would say.
Okay.
Smoothies, if I can add. Smoothies and juices.
Sattvic foods that should be included in your child's diet?
Include a lot of mung beans, white rice, red rice, great source of B12. Lot of vegetables like sweet potato, white potato, broccoli again, cabbage, cauliflower. Everything that's straight from the farm.
Right. Super, that brings us to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much. As always, it's incredible to chat with you. And look forward to the book.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a game changer.
Yes, in fact, the book is going to be out in a few weeks. And, you know, we'll share the pre-order booking link with you and your followers. And it's always a pleasure to do a talk with Kidstop Press because I know the priority here is education, kids' health, mom's health, rather than just selling products and services. Right?
Thank you. Thank you, Dimple. Thank you for always being there for us.
Wow, that was a whole lot of amazing information, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Here's a little bonus. If you've got burning questions of your own or just want to share your thoughts, don't hesitate to reach out to us on Instagram. It's at Kidstop Press, and me, your host, Mansi.Zaveri. We love hearing from you guys, and who knows, your question might just be featured in one of our future episodes. So of course, stay tuned and thanks for listening. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to wherever you are listening this podcast, because you do not want to miss a single episode.